today on Code Pen Radio.
Hey, everybody, time for another Code Pen Radio. I know we've taken a little bit of a break, but now we're back. It's now 2017, and we're going to be regularly doing a weekly, probably, Code Pen Radio again, where we talk about Code Pen stuff, like what it's like running a business like Code Pen, you know, like a web software business. And there's plenty to talk about. It can be very interesting. I think this week's episode, which we're going to talk about some different web software, specifically GitLab, GitLab.com, is pretty weird, interesting stuff. I have a feeling a lot of people are going to be interested in this because it's it's pretty fundamental software all of a sudden to running CodePen. So there's no sponsor this week, but I should mention that you can sponsor CodePen Radio. So just go to blog.codepen.io/radio, and there's kind of information about that there that you can find. We'll take one a week. You know, if you're interested in talking to the audience of CodePen Radio, you can do that. And so we'll just say that the sponsor this week, as has happened many times in the past, is CodePen Pro. Go to codepen.io/pro and see all the sweet pro features. Get on CodePen, which, as I've said many times before, is going to get sweeter and sweeter as time goes on, and more expensive and more expensive as time goes on. Anyway, that's enough intro. Like I said, we're going to be talking about GitLab this week, and leading that transition was Mr. Tim Sabbat. Hey, Tim.
Hi there.
And digging deep into its feature set is Rachel Smith. Hey, Rachel.
Hey.
Yay. So it's just the three of us. It'll be a different cast of three every week here on CodePen Radio, probably. So how many people out there do you think have heard of GitLab? Tim, in your estimation, is it like is pretty dang popular, common thing that people know about? So first of all, answer that question, and then just no matter what, tell us what the heck GitLab is.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on what circles you travel in. I'm a steady reader of Hacker News, and I would say that if you're reading Hacker News, you're, like, constantly being bombarded by articles that are saying that, like, I don't know, GitLab is catching up with GitHub and in some ways surpassing it. So I think it just depends on where you...
So they're real, real similar, yeah?
Well, they're similar in the sense that they both are they both use Git. You know, you can push and pull code from them like everybody's used to doing. And I guess when it comes down to it, that the basic technology behind it, you could host this on your own server without any of this. It's just choosing which service provider you use kind of defines what features you're going to get. You know, GitLab basically and GitHub both have tons of features built around the concept of Git. So things
like call it like self-hosted GitHub, although GitHub has self-hosted GitHub, but it's just really, it's called GitHub Enterprise and it's really expensive, right? GitLab is free, right? It's like free self-hosted GitHub in a way.
Yeah, so basically that's it. It's GitHub. So I guess we all know what that is. It's issue boards and it's you know, being able to push and pull and see branches and, you know, do code reviews and all that sort of stuff. It's just that GitLab is sort of a competitor to that. There's one other one I think called Bitbucket, which is pretty common too. But in general, you know, they all tend to have the same basic feature set, and then it comes down to what individualized stuff you like. We have some very specific needs, and maybe some of our listeners would have them too, and that's why we thought doing this podcast would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it's so this is a, I don't know, I feel like it's something you wanted for a long time, but it's absolutely a non-trivial change. It's one of those things where it's like you don't just up and do it. You know, it's not like changing, I don't know, where you eat lunch or something. I don't have a metaphor ready to rock and roll here, but it's like it's not a one day transition necessarily. So like we needed to be pretty darn sure that this is something that we wanted to do. Right. So like I guess that's going to be a lot of this show is like, let's convince people out there who are interested in this transition that it's worth it in some way, assuming that we've decided that it was worth it.
Yeah, I mean, in our case, the for me particularly, I have been using a private instance of GitLab for a really long time at CodePen, and it was mostly because of the ease of deployment. You know, for me, almost all of the issues that I had with GitHub had to do with like how difficult it was to get the code from GitHub into your VPC, basically inside your private network. Pulling and pushing code to that required a bunch of deployment keys and stuff like that, and you couldn't use internal resources. And we can go into all of this, but to me, it mostly had to do with like control and what we could control and what we couldn't over GitHub. So moving to
that seems to make a lot of sense. Like we, as you probably know, if you've listened to the show a bunch, we have a whole bunch of, we use AWS for like everything, Amazon Web Services, right? So all our servers and stuff are there, but we don't run GitHub. We just use like everybody else in the world. We just use it on GitHub server. So when we're pushing and pulling and running tests and stuff, you need to like extract the code from GitHub servers and get it onto our own servers. But GitLab, we're hosting. We host on, you've spun up an additional AWS server that runs GitLab, and thus all our code is just lives in there, and that like eases some things up for you.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, we probably should make that distinction. There's GitHub, there's GitLab.com, and then there's self-hosted GitLab, and that we're using the self-hosted GitLab product.
You can use GitLab like you use GitHub, like without self-hosting it?
Sure. They run a service, and I would say the majority of their users are probably doing that. So that, like, I guess if you want to differentiate, there's GitHub.com, there's GitLab.com, there's GitHub Enterprise, which is self-hosted GitHub, and then there's GitLab, which is self-hosted GitLab. So there's basically...
It seems confusing, but I bet most people follow that. There's self-hosted and not versions of both of these things.
Essentially, yeah. And the feature set for both of them sort of like runs in tandem with what's... You know, for the self-hosted one, runs in tandem with maybe a week behind what's on GitHub itself or GitLab. And you basically get all the features that are available to consumers, but you get to host it internally. And then you also get to, you get access to your own resources. And you know, depending on your use case, that's either valuable or not.
Okay. So it was compelling. One major reason it was compelling was that we're going to self-host it and we're going to run it on our own servers for why, other than like the ease of getting the, you know, the code on our own network or whatever. What are some of the other reasons? It's kind of uptime, right?
Yeah, I mean, uptime was a big one. We talked about here in the notes, we've got like, what was life before GitLab? And GitLab, for that was basically like GitHub was the thing, right? And it was fine. But the problem was when GitHub is down, and if you work at all in a big group, you understand that like when GitHub's down, everybody's like walking around grabbing a cup of coffee. You know, there's basically no work. Was that your experience, Rachel, too, where you came from, or am I alone in this thinking?
Oh yeah, I mean, everywhere I've worked, if GitHub is down, it pretty much slowed you down. And then the worst part is when your continuous integration is tied into GitHub, like. The last place I worked, I set up this CI system, which, you know, people would just push to get to deploy. And we're in a scenario where we had to, like, push to staging sites all the time for clients to see them. And when GitHub was down, it meant you had to go into, like, manual deploys mode, which really sucked. So that was kind of the worst part.
Yeah, I can imagine for you working on a product that isn't necessarily developer facing too, you can't just be like, hey client, you know, GitHub's down. They don't even understand that, I'm sure.
Not in advertising. It's like, if we don't see the new header on this thing in the next hour, it's like we're all gonna die. It's like it's very serious, and they don't understand what GitHub is down even means, you know.
Right.
Yeah. That's kind of a big deal, right? Is that it's not just like, oh, we can't push code to our little repo, but it's like, I don't know, it's still Git, so you can still like work locally and stuff. And there's probably other things that you can do. But if you literally can't deploy a broken part of your website because a third party service is down, that kind of sucks.
So that's basically, we're in the same situation here at CodePen. You know, we are definitely tied into Git for all of our continuous integration and continuous deployment stuff. And without it, you know, without some tool, whether that's GitHub or GitLab, we can't necessarily move forward. We're definitely not going to jump on the 12 servers that face the users and change the files manually. So if you're going to pull the code from somewhere, it has to be from, you know, it basically has to be from a centralized server. So when that's down, we're screwed. So that was that's one of the reasons. Like that's one of the differences. The other one has to do with like for me, I get the warm fuzzies knowing that like we're not a source of we're not a target for hackers as much anymore. There's like no way to access our GitHub our Git server from outside the network. It's basically locked down. It's inside of our VPC. And I don't think anyone is necessarily like targeting CodePen specifically, but if GitHub were to have some sort of like security incident, and let's say they found a way to expose people's their repositories were exposed, that means everyone's exposed all in the same way, and it would be entirely possible to do nefarious things or to pull our code or to you know just basically you know see our stuff. And I don't want people to see our stuff. It's our stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So you call it a VPC, and we always refer to it as the VPN. Are those the same things? Like literally, we have a URL that's our GitLab, our self-hosted version of it, and like I can't even see it unless I'm logged on to what I think of as our VPN.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're not familiar with those terms, think of like a local network around your house. You know, you can share files with the people inside of your local network. But people outside of that local network can't see it. It's the same kind of thing, but at the enterprise level. You basically got servers. They're sitting behind a set of IP addresses, and those IP addresses are not accessible from outside. So that's what I mean by VPC and VPN. We do use the VPN to log into the VPC, but in general, yeah, it's just a private network space that we use here.
Yeah, it's just another little – it's for security essentially, right?
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's all it's for. We can, you know, we can access internal resources that other people can't.
So we got some. You know, I mean, uptime is a thing. It's now. It's not like we have 100% uptime on it because just this last weekend, I was like, "Why can't I get on there?" And you're like, "Oh, that server fell over or whatever." I have to restart it. But at least it's under our control, right? It doesn't mean we have 100% uptime, but it means that if there's something wrong, you can fix it, not just twiddle our thumbs and wait to fix it.
Yeah, that's essentially it. And there are instructions that could be disseminated that say like, hey, just turn the server over if it's not working correctly or check the disk space or stuff like that. We can all sort of handle this. Whereas with GitHub, if they're under DDoS, which has happened several times in the last few years we've been involved with them, you know, you may or may not be able to push for an undetermined amount of time and you also have zero control over it. And that's probably the worst feeling, that like helpless feeling that like, hey, I really can't do anything at all. And I think that's why so many people do the water cooler thing where you're like, I'm just going to stand around and wait till GitHub's back again.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. We have control. We have code in our own network. We have higher security. All the things are starting to add up here a little bit. We also have cost. And I feel like, I'm sorry if I'm jumping around on you a little bit, but I wanted to kind of cover all those things. I think a lot of people are interested in the why, and certainly cost is one of those things. I think the absolute open source version of GitHub is free, right? But we also pay for it in some way. Can you go over that?
Yeah, sure. So the open source version of GitHub is, you're right, you can install it on your server. Oh, sorry, GitLab is 100% free. It's you can just install it, and there I can honestly say that the differences between GitLab Enterprise, the one we pay for, and GitLab Basic is there's not a huge difference, quite frankly. You know, the things we've noticed are like multiple boards, meaning like, and I guess Rachel's going to go over some of our. Some of the ways that we use project management on here, but she can create multiple boards, whereas you can't do that in the normal version. And then
really, that's one of the things. I know we decided to pay them because it was like we were hoping for like squashed commits or something, which we got used to on GitHub, which wasn't a thing unless you pay for it.
So they've got that, but it's like a fast forward merge thing. I actually don't even know how to describe it, but it does not work the same way as squash commits do. I think they've got that in the pipeline.
It's more of like a auto rebase thing or something rather than a squash merge.
Yeah, to me it means like it never allows you to auto rebase and then you have to rebase on your own and then push it up. That's been my experience with it. I don't know if that's been your experience or not. I just sort of ignored that feature. We did purchase it for that reason. And one of the other reasons was like, it's not terribly expensive and we're also supporting like open source development. To me, that's a pretty big one.
I find it weird. I don't know if this is like appropriate to touch on or whatever, but it seems like it's this open source product that's like an absolute copy of GitHub. Like, how do you think GitHub feels about it? Or is that not fair? But it just seems like everything is like, is like as identical as it can be to GitHub. You know, like they want you to feel as comfortable on GitLab as you were on GitHub is what it seems like to me.
So I don't know. I've been paying attention to this space for a long time, and I feel like for a while, for the first few years, it really was like a bootleg clone of GitHub. It just didn't feel that much different. And in fact, in some ways, because you were sort of imprinted with the way GitHub does things, GitLab felt a little awkward because you're like, ah, I don't really know my way around this thing. But I do feel like in the last year or so, it feels like they've really pulled, you know, they've either caught up or in some cases like pulled ahead of GitHub in the feature set that they provide, particularly around continuous integration and continuous deployment. Typically, you have to have two services for that, and GitLab does not require that. Like if you've got it installed locally, there's like all kinds of stuff you can do with build services that like just are not available through GitHub. You have to go to a third-party service for that.
Yeah, it's always seemed like, so they have pages and they have like some Jekyll stuff they do on GitHub, but like they pretty much don't touch deployment. You BYO deployment on Git. And I don't think GitLab gives you deployment tools necessarily, but it gives you more, I don't know, can explain it more, but it seems like there's this tab on GitLab called pipelines, and we use the heck out of it, and that's not a tab on GitHub.
Yeah, that's like so that's thing. Yeah, you're right. It's that stuff is not available. We depended on a third party service called CodeShip for our continuous integration, and really it was more like continuous testing.
That's the testing stuff. Yeah,
yeah, that was the testing stuff. But for us, like, because this is run internally and because we have access to our own VPC and resources inside of it, like, you know, Docker stuff and AWS EFS stuff, like we can actually take it a step further and not just test our stuff, but like grab it and deploy it. And I know that there are ways to hook into, you know, other continuous deployment services for that. But in our case, like they give you tools to make continuous integration, continuous testing, and continuous deployment really, really simple. And that to me is the biggest sell of them all. That's simply not available on GitHub.
That seems like a big deal.
I mean, from that pipeline's perspective, for me, I love the fact that now because we're deploying from the server, like before we had a command line deployment, and it's very clear in GitLab there whether a build on staging has actually been pushed to production. So if I'm going to deploy something to production, I can like very easily see who has moved code into master since the last production deploy. So in the case that we have a regression or something goes wrong, like it's very easy to see like who's touched what and who, like, what's gone into this production build. Whereas before it was kind of like hard to tell because we're kind of deploying from our machines and there's no record of that in GitLab or GitHub. So
that's a good point that we do not deploy from our machines anymore. It all happens on Git.
No.
Yeah. And I mean, to add to that, there's like, you know, there's the automatic stuff that happens every time you push. And then there's a bunch of manual steps that before I would have to do and sort of just only I knew about. These were like little batch scripts that I've written to, like, I don't know, clean up images or like get some spare disk space or see what version is pushed to production. And so any of these like little scripts that I used to run before are now like manual build steps on a pipeline. And what that allows anyone to do is to perform those actions. So if I were not available necessarily, but reachable by phone, or if I had written some good documentation, you can just be like, oh, okay, I see you right now. Like we're, you know, right now the disk space is low, so I'm going to press this button and basically clear out some room by deleting a bunch of images that we're not using anymore. That kind of stuff is, you can write that stuff and make that stuff easily available through a UI, which before was just, you know, I don't have UI chops, yeah. So we just didn't have that.
I feel more comfortable for sure, and especially like I wouldn't have known how to like roll back before, you know. That seems like a pretty fundamental like Git thing, like, oh, we made a mistake, let's roll back to a previous version and deploy that. This is way easier with our pipeline now. I literally can just go to an old build that I know is working and deploy that, which is sweet.
Right. So I mean, I guess it should be stressed too that these aren't things that you get out of the box with GitLab. These are things that you have to build yourself. You know, you're given a set of tools that gives visibility to steps that you have to write yourself. So I guess it should be noted that, like, out of the box, you're not like, okay, we get rollbacks or whatever. Out of the box, what you do get is the ability to do whatever you want to do and make those steps really, really visible to your entire team. And that's what I like probably the most about working with GitLab.
So, and it's not, yeah, I don't know. I guess, I don't know, just speak for everybody, but it's not like GitHub, ugh, that thing sucks. You know, we're just like, no, we switched to this because we did this some analysis and it seems like it's a better fit for us in a way. Similarly, we used CodeShip before that integrates with GitHub to run our continuous integration stuff, of which we really only did continuous testing. We've always wanted to get to CI, which involves continuous deployment too. So we can get there with GitLab too. That's just like on us. We're just not quite there yet. We'd like to get to the point where tests are running automatically. And if we push to this branch and the tests pass, then it automatically goes to master. Well, all that stuff is like stuff we can level up on still, right? It's not like we're perfect.
Oh yeah. And I mean, for the record, like, I guess we, at this moment, it would probably take an hour to get the rest of that going. You know, we at the moment push to our testing servers automatically whenever something new is pressed to the master branch. The question is, like, do we want to, like, do this automatically? If everyone feels comfortable at some point, it would be a matter of spending some time and, you know, changing up a couple build steps, and we'd be pushing to production as well every time something's pressed to master. So there's all this stuff is available, and you don't have to, like, wait for some third-party service to start offering continuous deployment to do this. It's kind of just up to you to say, oh, yeah, I guess our team is ready now to trust the system and just know that, you know, when I take this step in Git, this other thing happens in GitLab.
So cost is the thing we started talking about here. And so because we now we have this free copy of GitLab on our self-hosted server, we get to not pay for GitHub anymore, which we've calculated was approximately $1,000 a year for us because of our users and private repos and whatever. That was just about where we were at. And CodeShip, as awesome as it is, and we've talked to them on this show before, we like that product, but because we are able to do that stuff in GitLab now, we get to save the cost and not use that anymore. Which, again, it's not because we don't like. It's just because, hey, $1,000 is $1,000. You know, we might as well do it in-house if we can and we have the chops for it. So we're saving $2,000 a year there, which probably doesn't quite pay for, like, the time and effort you have behind this, because you'd probably be a pretty expensive developer in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, I did some price comparisons here. We're paying about $2,000 a year for GitLab and or GitHub and CodeShip. Mm-hmm. And then between the server for GitLab and then the two build servers that we run in tandem, we're still looking at like only a $400 savings per year running GitLab.
So and it's a toss up. I mean, that's,
yeah, it's a wash. And if you think about my time, like, spent, I guess initially setting all this stuff up, I would say that, you know, we're probably down a little bit in money, but over time that, like, you amortize this over a few years and the cost that we've spent in my time is negligible in the speed that we've gained and the ability, like, the agility.
Yeah,
that
we get. So we get some speed and we get, and then all those other benefits too, like the security and the, I don't know, the ability to just do more interesting things.
Yeah, I guess speed or agility is probably the right way to say it. Like, whatever we want to do, we can do, and we're not, like, bound by someone else's continuous deployment, you know, setup.
There's another benefit too in that. So I don't know. I think at the time, GitHub, you know, GitHub, like the Kanban board things, like the Trello looking feature stuff is pretty new to GitHub. And I think at the time we started this transition, we're like, oh, cool, let's move to GitLab because they have those. Now GitHub does too. We never used them, but are fairly big on them recently at CodePen. And at one point we kind of like went all in on Trello and moved a ton of stuff to Trello. And now we're off Trello and on to GitLab. So there's a lot of moving around. We're not off Trello, but like we're getting there because GitLab offers something that's so darn similar and actually is in some ways a little bit more robust. I think Rachel knows the most about that. So maybe you could catch us up on.
To be fair to GitHub, the Kanban board system, like on GitLab is like almost exactly the same as GitHub. Like, it's not like GitLab has any, I haven't seen any huge advantages there. But as Chris mentioned, we hadn't really even investigated using the GitHub boards, and we were using Trello boards to organize our tasks. But very recently, we decided to move our project sort of specific tasks into GitLab. And that's because Trello is really good, in my opinion, for like idea generation and like quickly getting up cards for like one-off ideas you have. But it's not very, the fact that cards are so easy to add, like at any point anywhere, kind of hurt us when we were trying to plan sort of dev work for a project, because we'd have like duplicate cards and the cards weren't tied to any specific pull request or issue in the code base. So it's kind of like wishy-washy having project planning over in Trello. But I mean, Trello is still great for, obviously we have a ton of ideas for CodePen and we want somewhere to throw them so we don't, you know, forget them. And when we're like planning for the future, we've got all those ideas there. Trello is awesome for that. But we decided to switch to GitLab for like actionable tasks, relating to getting a project finished within CodePen. And yeah, so far, like GitLab boards, we've been using the GitLab board feature for about a week now, and we're finding it pretty good. It's nice to have, as a dev, to have like your code and your to-dos all in the one site, in the one place. Just that having, not having to have your Trello board open and your GitLab open and keeping track of things in two different places, to have those just tied in together, it's really good. And I mean, at this, the using this tool was kind of like part of a sort of change in our process where we're going to try to do more project management at CodePen, and specifically in regards to like tracking our time and monitoring where our time is spent, so we can be more deliberate about what we spend our time on. And GitLab issues is allows us to like add time estimates and time tracked to them. So that was kind of like a big plus for us with GitLab issues. It's like a very new GitLab feature, but we're using it. We look forward to seeing what they bring to that feature in future releases. And yeah, that's part of like a larger process that we're
That time stuff is so interesting in that we were just like, let's call it March 1st, you know, or some just pulled out of the air garbage. And this was like, let's stop doing that, maybe like adults or whatever, and start looking at all of the things that are required to go into a feature and all, you know, and make, you know, assign them priorities and people and milestones and time estimates and stuff. It feels like really grown up management of a thing, and it's pretty interesting.
And we can probably do like a whole episode on how we've changed that. But like GitLab, it as a tool is working well with our new sort of processes that we're coming up with.
Right. I mean, the one criticism we had when we decided to switch to this is that Trello doesn't necessarily deal with the dimension of time particularly well. You can assign due dates, and I guess that's it. And the idea that this has time tracking involved with it, so you can do an estimate and a time spent, to me, that was like a huge win.
Yeah, I really like it, and it's very uncomplicated. It's pretty simple to update the time. It's just a command-based system where you type a command into the issue comment, which is kind of weird but also works really well. Like as a developer, you just quickly smash in a command, which we're used to doing anyway, and it adds time. So it's like minimal amount of effort on our part to log our time, which makes adapting to this time tracking process a lot easier. than, say, trying to do timesheets or entering it into a separate system or whatever.
That, it feels that pretty good because we're not tracking time for billing or to like evaluate the performance of anybody. We're just kind of like as a group sick of not having an understanding of how long it's going to take to complete a feature or whatever. And we've just been like, if we do this, we'll know. Or we'll be a lot closer to, and at, and, you know, the further we get along, the more accurate those time estimates are going to be, and we can plan around that and not feel so like wishy-washy about these big important things that we're doing. So we get that comes in the GitLab package as well. So it's kind of like we replaced GitHub and CodeShip and Trello with one open source tool. And it just feels kind of cool. There may be like a word of warning for people doing this. Maybe that's a good place to end it because we've been talked for half an hour already. But we made a few mistakes in how we moved like the repos and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like I can for sure take responsibility for this and talk about it. One of the bigger things is just using their importing tools. Like, we did not do that. We basically were pushing to GitLab at like a separate remote. And that was a real technical way to do this stuff. But what it didn't do was pull over issues and wikis and that sort of stuff. And by the time we cut over to the new system, we realized we were leaving some stuff orphaned, in particular issues, which became a real, we had to basically go back and manually enter those because there wasn't a way to just import the issues, for example. So that's probably the biggest warning, I guess, I have to anyone is that, you know, read the documentation.
they have an official way to like yank in a GitHub repo and over into GitLab with everything.
Right.
Oh,
yeah. Cool. It's like on the site itself. It's just a button, essentially. You just have to give access to your GitHub account via keys. And once you've done that, GitLab will actually pull in all of your repos and say which ones do you want to import. And you just go import. Because we end up doing it for a bunch of our smaller repos, not our main repo, but we have like a bunch of side app repos.
That's really nice to know that part of this isn't so bad. Like, this actually could be a one-day project if you really needed it to be, right? If you're just like, all right, everybody, we're off GitHub. Here's your new, pull these repos instead. It could be real quick.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. We did have a lot of work setting up the deployment pipelines and stuff like that. But if you're strictly using it for pulling and pushing code, then yeah, I mean, it's a one and done thing.
And if you have a deployment set up that all the part of its configuration is, hey, where's this repo? Then that's just a matter of changing a URL where that repo lives. So that could be easy too.
Yeah, I think depending on how you host it, because ours is private, that's not necessarily the case. A lot of these like third-party services, if they pull from a repo, that repo needs to be exposed to the internet. But yes, if you are using this, if you're exposing GitLab to the internet, you could for sure do this in a single day type deal.
Yeah, because you could just spin up a public server on which to install your GitLab on.
Right.
It has auth, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. It's not. It's just auth is fine, but it's not as powerful as auth that's totally hidden from the internet.
Right.
That's pretty cool. All right. Well, that's a good place to end it. Any final words from anybody?
I just really hope that GitLab brings in Squash Merge like pull requests soon.
Yeah, Squash Merge would be good and a burn down chart. If anyone out there is listening to this, let's get a burn down chart in there too. That sounds good.
That's the one thing I miss from GitHub is the ability to Squash Merge a pull request. In GitLab, they're called merge requests. But yeah, that when they're supposed to, it's on the roadmap. So I hope it comes in soon because that's
please.
I really like that feature.
My final feeling about GitLab is like it's both incredibly impressive work. Like, holy crap, this is like really good software. High five, team. And like I feels like still like just a little not as polished as GitHub feels, like just in like just dumb stuff like spacing and margin and what buttons
way
are
to bring
like
it down, Chris.
Man, I know, I feel like a jerk.
Props. Whoa.
But it's just, I know. And everybody, but it might, and then there's some aspect of just like getting used to it too. So maybe it's better, you know, I don't know. And it's just, and that you're just so used to one, the way one thing, everything is so similar. You know, you get so used to like opening issues and, oh, and GitHub, it's so cool. You can just drag and drop an image onto the text area and it just uploads. And like, that's exactly how it works in GitLab too. You know, it's not that hard to get used to. Cool. It is funny how closely it gets to it. Like on issues now, they have like emoji attachments to issues now. Like it's just touch. That's why I feel like, remember back from Woohoo days, when people would steal things from the Woohoo UI, I used to be like, bastards. I bet that's how GitHub feels, because it's just, it follows the development so closely.
I think that's just like web product life though, right? Like it, like these right, days, sure. It's like you just got to expect people will rip off your stuff.
Except CodePen. Nobody rip us off.
No, he's allowed to rip us off.
We're going to have emoji comments soon. Okay, everybody. It's good to be back. We'll talk to you again next week. CodePen Radio. Sign up for Pro. It's sweet.
Bye.
9 7 6 0 3 1 8